once again, it's time for you, Arthur.
Once again.
How about still?
Okay, still. No, that would imply that we...
Still the food Maven Schwartz.
Okay, still the food Maven Schwartz, and still talking about apples. And it would imply that we just... We stopped the show, but we talked about it all week. I had thoughts after last week when
I talked about apples. And I gave out an apple recipe that I have since made again. That's how much I like it and how easy it is. But I also talked about this apple walnut cake, and we talked about parv or parva, whatever you want to say. If you're into non-dairy, this is the cake for you. There is no dairy, no milk. There are eggs, but there's no dairy product, no butter. The shortening is oil. It's a wonderful cake, and I talked about it so much last week that I had to make one for myself. And we just finished off the last piece this morning.
Okay, going to make it again?
It's a very good... Well, I probably will. What I was inspired to make was the cake with the apples that had to be... Everybody says, oh, what apple do you use? Well, nowadays there are certainly dozens of choices. And, in fact, after I said that last week, we have a supermarket around the corner that was rearranging everything, and they now have an entire apple wall in the produce department. I'm not joking. It must be a 20-foot-long stretch where they have nothing but apples, various varieties, a lot of them local, meaning New York State apples. Anyway... I thought about this, and I realized when my grandmother made... Well, my grandmother didn't make this cake, but somebody's grandmother did, because I got the original recipe back in the 1970s. And by that time, it was already like my friend Bruce's heirloom recipe. So certainly made at the beginning of the 20th century by Aunt whoever she was, this cake was made with Macintosh apples. There were, and I'm thinking of it, there were really no other apples. Later in the century, there were a delicious, I'm talking about in the New York metro area. If you lived in Washington State, or if you lived in the Hudson Valley where a lot of old varieties were grown, you would have, you know, more selection of apples. But a lot of apples are created. In fact, the most popular apple in America right now is not the, Macintosh is so unpopular that there was, just looking around the internet, somebody was even questioning whether they were grown anymore, since he or she had not seen one in years. They are certainly grown, but they're hardly the number one apple. And delicious outdistanced Macintosh a while back. Gala is in fact a cultivar of. Of Macintosh and something else, and Gala is the number one apple now, outbeating Delicious, which for many, many years was the most popular apple in America. By the way, if you got the apples from Northwest U.S., which is where a lot of Delicious apples come from, Oregon and Washington, you would have one apple. I have bought Delicious apples that are grown in the Hudson Valley that have a much different flavor. Now I learned there are 50 different kinds of Delicious out there. So if you get a good strain in your market, you may want to use them. However, I prefer, for cooking anyway, a Golden Delicious. And for years I was using Jana Gold, which is also a hybrid apple. They were very good. But I decided I had to try this with the Macs that certainly were the apple originally used in this. And it was interesting because Macintosh, first of all, I thought the Macs were going to, in my experience, they always did, oxidize and turn brown very quickly. These did not. That was a clue to me that they were going to be different. And in the end, they gave wonderful flavor to the cake, but they are not really meant to be in a cake like this because they practically dissolved into the cake. Now, today is today the third day that we're eating this cake?
I don't know. It depends on when you cooked it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think when I did it. But I think today was the third. I had the last slice a little while ago. And the third day was the best day. If only you could keep this cake around for 3 days before you devour the whole thing. Actually, I gave away about half the cake because it's too dangerous to have this enormous cake in the kitchen. But my point is the Macintosh apples do behave differently than, for instance, Jonna Gold, which is what I was using for a long time in this cake, and Gala, too, probably keep their shape better than these Macintosh do. I cut everything into rather large hunks, and still, there were no large hunks in the cake. So I consumed myself with this little bit of research as well, and sure enough, Macs are now actually referred to as heirloom apples. Does that make you feel old, Jill?
No.
It made me feel old.
Well, that's
I have to recall, I'm always wanting to reproduce my grandmother's applesauce. And to that end, I have the sieve with its conical mortar that she used to make applesauce, which gives it the right consistency. But now I have to do it, remembering that she only had Macintosh to deal with. I'll have to do it with the Macs. And the Macs do tend to turn a bit brown, which is why my grandmother sometimes, when it was in season and we just ended, put in a prune plums. I keep thinking to put for the color.
Wait,
as
put
well
in
as
what?
The flavor. Pardon me?
She put in what?
Prune plums. Those little, or sometimes they're called Italian plums. Those little purple plums. They're
I didn't know that.
Tapered at the ends a little bit.
Yeah, I had no idea what those were called. Are those the ones that turn into prunes?
Yes, they do. So here's something funny. I think this is still, you can find packages that are not called prunes, but are called dried plums. And when this, the idea of changing the name on packaging of this dried fruit, they hired the prune producers of America hired a PR firm out in California to do the research on this and tell them whether or not it was a good idea to change the name to dried plums. So being, if I may say, a major food editor at the time, they called me to ask me what I thought of this, which I didn't think too much of it. I thought, well, it's a little silly. But apparently young people are turned off by prunes, but they had no connection to anything called a dried plum. So a few years go by, and they make the change. I don't know if it's still, is extant, but my producer on the radio, a very smart woman, young woman, in her early 20s, and vegetarian, was standing and eating what I would call prunes. And I said, oh, I see you're eating prunes. And she said, no, they're not prunes. They're dried plums. And she was happy eating dried plums, but not. She would not have been happy if she was eating prunes.
I think that's really, actually, quite rather clever.
Yeah, well, so I don't know. I have to go look in the store.
All right.
I'll tell you one thing, though, because I can't find prunes with their pits still in them. Everything is a pitted prune these days.
Yeah, and just momentito. Okay, so here's the problem. They've actually convinced people that they don't want pits or pips. So they don't want the seed to grow it.
It's just the reason I want the pip, as you call it, I would say pit with a T, but anyway, either way, it doesn't matter. The reason I want them is because I put them in long-cooked Jewish Eastern European tzimis. And if you have a pitted prune, they're more likely to fall apart than if you have one that's still on the pit, where they manage to stay relatively whole, and that's what I want.
And not to mention the fact, again, not for you, but for others, if you don't have the pip or the pit or the whatever or the seed or the this, then it's a one-off. And the whole idea is that these things are actually able to grow and reproduce. So even though you've been completely convinced for the convenience.
You think they don't understand that the pits were taken out? Oh, well, maybe not. You know, a lot of people.
Baby carrots.
I submit baby carrots. From a chicken.
Yeah, exactly. So
if they saw the whole chicken, they probably wouldn't eat chicken breast.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's the thing. You know, yeah, it's the thing underneath the, you know, the
right.
The, right. No.
So Macintosh apples reign. As far as I'm concerned, I bought a whole bunch. They were the least expensive apple in my store on the from the Apple Wall, and they were really in good shape, meaning they were glossy and, you know, it's an apple that's apple red. It's the red we think of when we think of a red apple. In fact, sometimes they're referred to as red Macintosh. There is no other color, but I don't know. I read that somewhere. Anyway, they're really a good apple to eat out of hand. The skins are not so tough that you can't just bite into it, even if you have dentures, which I don't. Just saying. And it's like iceberg lettuce, you know. Very, I don't know what to say, but most young people have no respect for iceberg lettuce, or they don't even know what a Macintosh apple is.
Well,
moving on.
Oh, we can't do iceberg lettuce for a second for Marshall?
Oh, sure we can. All right. Love iceberg lettuce.
Exactly, and so did he. So iceberg lettuce. And I was the great, and we're going back again. You can add it. You could say, I'm going back half century more, but I used to be, I could say decades. Anyway, I used to be the family salad sorter.
Salad sorter?
Correct. Salad sorter. The family salad sorter. Because
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yes, well, my father.
Is your brother in the salad business?
That was later. And he obviously came over to the right side, the correct side, the light. But he and my father were the iceberg white eaters, and my mother and I were the green. So we solved that. It was two against one because my mother was out of the picture, but I was the salad sorter. So I would, since I was also the salad maker, I would sit there and I would pick out the green leaves for me, and the white leaves for them. They liked the crunch. I was. So, but
you were anti-crunch.
I'm not. Probably. I am anti-crunch. I am the anti-crunch. But I love green, and I love that feeling and that taste. And that's just me. But iceberg.
Well, darker
you can,
greens have more nutritional benefit. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but you can do more with
than
iceberg.
White greens. But the white greens have incredible crunch that just makes it feel good.
Yeah, it's fun to eat. And
I agree.
So if you
the wedge is back. Such a 50s thing, but for at least the last 10-15 years you go to a restaurant and they $15 for a wedge of iceberg.
I know. So think
as
of
if
the
it's
profit.
Something exotic. Although it better have a really good dressing on top for $15.
Right, but even so, it's like if they've got people, once again, they, I shouldn't say they, but people have been programmed, for lack of a better term, to pay X for that. So there's a huge profit in, in a wedge plus. I mean, you could, for $15, you could really put, you know, gold bars on top of that wedge.
Well, I don't know. Prices by you are probably not.
No, prices here are just insane. Insane. Would you like to get me started? I usually do gasoline, but I'll move on.
I just did.
Okay. Yes, you're right. All right. Well, not since my grandmother used to say something like that. Since you mentioned it, I think it went like that. Since you mentioned it, something that used to cost, you know, and I mean, it was hand prepared. So people here will know what I'm talking about, but I'm just going to keep it rude. But anyway, something that used to cost for a certain amount, let's just say $6 and or even $5.95, let's go with $5.95, is now out there for $17.95.
Yeah, well,
for
you know what, We're all sounding like my grandfather.
Yeah, but your grandfather
was a waiter in a dairy, in a kosher dairy restaurant.
We can't, because where's the local kosher dairy restaurant?
Well, there's none around here.
Okay.
Well, there may be, but I'm not aware of it. In any case, I wouldn't go. But the thing is, it was called The Famous, and it was famous. But everything in those days was famous. I mean, think about it. Nathan's Famous hot dogs, even before anybody heard of them. So anyway, my grandfather came home one day and said, I can't believe they raised the price of mushroom barley soup from 25 cents to 50 cents. Who's going to pay 50 cents for a bowl of soup?
Okay.
So now that bowl of soup is $12.
And people think it's okay.
And, yeah, I'll take that. It's the least expensive first course.
Well, I mean, that's good. I'm really glad you have a family of 12.
It has a 16th of an ounce of porcini in it. Anyway,
apples?
I'm cooking again. I came home from a trip where part of the attraction was the fact that I was going to not have to cook for 3 weeks or clean up the kitchen for 3 weeks. And I came home, and what did I do? As soon as I got home, I started cooking every day. And this morning, for instance, I cook in the morning. I think everybody who listens to this knows I'm a morning cook because I get tired in the afternoon. So unless I've cooked something and we have it for dinner, it's not happening. So I shouldn't go that far. But I made a big pot of chili. And we will eat the chili. This will take us, I don't know, 3 or 4 meals, but several of them will be right out of the freezer. But my go-to lately is Thai peanut sauce. And I'm sure I must have mentioned this on the air before, but now it's become part of my regular repertoire. And, you boil up some spaghetti, regular old Italian spaghetti, and you got dinner practically. But I also now can buy in my supermarket vacuum packaged Asian noodles. They're like fresh noodles, and you can put the package unopened, but with some holes pricked into it. It's a plastic bag. Put it in the microwave. In 90 seconds, you have hot Asian noodles of various sizes and types. So this sauce, I do that 90 seconds, and then I put some of this Thai peanut sauce on it, and I'm in heaven.
So all right, so my brother, I'm just going to interrupt for 1 second because I was all excited about those Stabba bags as they were making the clamshells. And he said, you don't want that in your food. Now I'll go back to being quiet listening to you.
You don't want to do...
You don't want to cook it in that bag, said he.
I see.
And I'm
going to die now.
No, you're going to live happily ever after, but I'm just telling listeners that someone who was actually in
I would say to your brother, all the chromosome damage has been done already. So
to you and to me.
Other people, I don't know.
I don't know.
People
should just have an option.
I don't know. There are other ways to, you can also, I read on the box, you can take the noodles out of the package, put them in a saucepan with a little, I think it was 3 tablespoons of water and a tablespoon of soy sauce, and let it come to a boil and cover the pot and let them sit for 2 or 3 minutes. That's another way.
Okay.
So you can do that.
Okay. Life is full of choices.
Yeah. So in my peanut sauce, I decided I had to write it down when I got it down where I liked it. But this is also a matter of taste. I mean, you may want a little bit more soy, a little bit more vinegar. You'll tell me. No, you don't tell me. You just do it. So for a half a cup, this makes quite a lot of sauce, a half a cup of peanut butter, and I use a really pure peanut butter. Yes, it does separate, but yes, I stir it all the time. So a half a cup of peanut butter, and that gets 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, 2 tablespoons of I happen to have rice vinegar, but it could be white wine vinegar or even just distilled vinegar, the kind you wash the windows with. So 2 tablespoons of vinegar, a teaspoon of sesame oil. Now, I noticed in the supermarket the other day that there is sesame oil and then there's sesame blend oil. The price difference was minimal, but I don't want to pay for whatever oil they're blending with the sesame oil when I can, in one little line over, they're selling pure sesame oil. So look at the label. 1 teaspoon of pure sesame oil. And then now, if you do want some sweetener, you can use maple syrup. That's handy and easy. If you have brown sugar that hasn't turned into stone, you can add a tablespoon of brown sugar. You don't need a lot of sugar here. Then you also want to add garlic and ginger. I like to grate garlic into this. You don't have pieces of garlic. One very large clove of garlic. And then I would say 1 inch or so of fresh ginger root, also grated right into the peanut butter mixture. Plus, you want some heat here. Now, I've been using this gochujang, which is a Korean chili paste. It comes in a nice squeegee bottle, which I like. And sriracha is the other one, the one that everybody has these days. And that's good, too. So, I don't know, a teaspoon to start. Blend this all together. I use a little whisk to get it all smooth. And it's going to be too thick. So add a couple tablespoons of water. That's it. Adjust it to taste. I always am adding just a couple drops more of vinegar. And that's it. And it's interesting. It's very sharp and strong when it's first made. But then if you let it sit for some hours or even overnight, it will mellow out and you won't really get the zing of the ginger, but you get the undertone of the ginger. You don't get the heat of the garlic, but you do get the flavor of the garlic. It's very nice. So you can make it in this large, it's not a large amount. It's going to be, I don't know, 2/3 of a cup, 3/4 of a cup at the most, 3/4 of a cup. And you can keep it in a jar, and if you refrigerate it, it will stiffen up. So either take it out ahead of time or just add some more water. You may want to add a pinch of salt at that point. Anything that gets refrigerated a while usually needs a salt adjustment.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I made this. I put this on noodles, and now... Nowadays, I put diagonally sliced, as fine as I can get them, scallions, and very finely julienned green pepper. And if you have the patience, a julienne of carrot. You can use the fine thread-like blade on a mandolin. That would be great. And you garnish the top of your dressed noodles with that. And then the other night I made it, I did it with a grilled boneless, skinless chicken thigh.
Oh, nice.
Sliced on top of that.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And very, very, there's a word for healthful.
I don't know. It's very fattening, though.
Oh, well.
I mean, peanut butter.
What? If it's healthful.
And then, of course, the sodium content of this is a little on the...
Don't get me started on sodium. I saw the greatest thing about sodium. This whole sodium thing?
Yeah.
It's along with the labeling thing. Your body needs salt. Your body is salt. This whole, you shouldn't have... Your cells need salt to function.
Well,
so I
you
got,
know,
I
once did a book proposal with a cardiac specialist who wanted to do a book on restaurants where you could eat healthfully. But in fact, salt was not one of the criteria he wanted because he said, the thought of this could be different now. If you have hypertension, to treat it with diet means you can't even eat celery, he used to say, because celery is high in sodium.
Right.
So you need medication if that's the case, and then you can eat like a normal person. Anyway, I'm a salt freak myself, more than I am a sugar person.
And I will just tell you, as we bid each other adieu to continue this conversation until next week when you are still the food maven. There's just P.S. the thinking, the conventional wisdom, quote, quote, is all about low sodium, but the what he was fundamentally saying is not changed. It's correct. You need salt, and the medication is, well, to be continued.
Well, let me say, in my experience, people, us, others, get stuck with the nutrition advice you got, whatever, at the period where you were most concerned, which is probably when you were in your 30s or 40s, and you see you starting to get old. But, I mean, I know lots of people who are still fat phobic, even though we know that that's not the cause of high cholesterol is not eating the good fats. And I don't want to go into this, but, you know.
We're not going to then. How about we
let's not.
How about we just say,
we have to do something happy today. Let's eat apple cake.
Okay. Have a good week. Loved
you
Bob.
Too.
All right.
Loved everyone. Bye.